information.
Ja. Jag tror att det kommer bli lite mixed av svenska och engelska. För att jag har skrivit allting på engelska. Alla noteringar i engelska. Ja, men just det.
Ja,
men då tar jag det.
Kör
på engelska. I try to do it in English then. And does someone need translation to Swedish? No.
Ja, men gör det.
Okay, so actually the first subject is maybe quite unusual, but it actually in my last course, which was about Christian ethics, we got to choose one book of selected bibliography about different topics, where we're gonna write a book review. And I choose a book called The Meaning of Sex. Quite interesting. But this author has written this book, I can highly recommend it, about sex. And why he wrote this book was actually, he had a came into discussion with a pupil of his. He's a teacher, and one of his pupils said during a discussion that there doesn't have to be a meaning with sex, and I think we can see this in society today, that people I don't think people really know if there is a meaning. And what it is. I mean, you see all these shows on TV where the only purpose is to get drunk and have sex. And according to this author, and I believe that too, that that is probably not the right meaning of that. So, according to this author called, I think it's Polish name, Wojciechowski. There is a meaning with sex, and the meaning is also intrinsic. I think what this book does is correct one of the most prevalent errors about sex. Like one mistaking pleasure for good in itself. I mean, we have probably heard this before, but everything that is good or everything that is pleasurable for us is not doesn't have to be good for us. We know that in different things. And for this author, when he heard his pupil say this, that it doesn't have to be a meaning with sex. For him, it was like saying there doesn't have to be a meaning of eating, or it doesn't have to be a meaning of breathing. You see the point? There is one meaning with breathing. It's to survive, and actually, and it's a meaning with eating also, to survive. But if you eat the wrong things, and if you eat too much, it's not good for you. And he draw this parallel with sex actually, and he I'm sorry, I have to jump here a little bit, so he divide his book into several subjects called the meaning of sexual power, the meaning of sexual differences, the meaning of sexual love, the meaning of sexual beauty, and the meaning of sexual purity. And then it ends the book. The book is actually written for everyone. It doesn't include God that much in most of his book until the end. He sort of does a cliffhanger because he points there. I mean, in many times in the book, he points to God, but he doesn't reveal God until the end. So it's quite, you know, building up a case here, and he ends with a chapter where he actually sort of figures things out. But so I would try to briefly just, you know, tell you what I found in this book. As said, sex has meaning, it just not any arbitrary meaning, but an intrinsic meaning. Again, just like breathing or eating. He uses a lot of natural law thinking in his book. Natural law is the doctrine that says that as we are images of God, God has put we are reflected of that and can actually, through reason, actually know what is right or wrong. All people can do that. All people, not just believing people, but all people, in some way can differ right from wrong, from natural law, from that we are images of God. But then, of course, sin, environment, etc., can, you know, bend this to different, that we don't have this clue so much anymore. One thing he argues is that then our bodies then are designed for a sexual design designed for a special purpose, and that is actually to procreate and to unite, and these two are very tightly stitched together. And he also thinks there's God is really, he knows what he did when he created man and woman. And men and women are different, not just in the body, but we can see that we are different in the body, but also in the soul. And we have different needs. And we're like a puzzle, I would say, different pieces of a puzzle that fits really well together, but that all the pieces are different. But the puzzle couldn't be a whole if they weren't different and can match together. And this author also says that the problem today with gender equality, I think we all believe that men and women should have the same rights, should be paid the same for equal jobs, etc., etc. I don't say anything against that, and not this author either, but what it says is sort of the problem with the feminist movement today is sort of a paradox, because it actually works against the very equality it tries to hold up. Because when they say equality, they almost always mean the same as men. So women should be the same as men. But who does say that men are better than women? Do you see the paradox of it?
Yeah.
I think women are great, and they are great the way they are. They shouldn't, be the same as men. And so I really agree with this author. And the sanity in understanding sex, according to the author, is it actually begins with the fact that men are potentially fathers, and women are potentially mothers. And this is sort of what we are created to be, actually. It doesn't have to say that everyone has to get children, but that is actually why we are, the design we have. And then he has a really interesting part about love. because some call love flighty and unstable, and others believe it's a long life commitment. And this is actually not different views on the same thing, but actually different views on different things. Because love, according to the author again, is the correct way, the correct way of using the term love is an attitude of the will that can be chosen, pledged, and promised. And actually, there's an imitator of love, and that's called enchantment. So, enchantment is actually where you can feel the love, you can feel, you know, everything that the love in the right sense has, but you don't have the will, you only have the feelings, and feelings can cool down, right? And then it's not love anymore. It's just was something, temporary. He actually, what he did was to, let me see, I can show this. I don't see if you see this, but here you have three circles on the left side and one on the right hand side. And the bigger one is called charity. And you know what charity is? It's something you. Oh, what?
Charity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Charity is something you give something and you don't expect anything back, right? So charity is love, in the sense that we can always also read in the Bible. In the Bible there are four different words for love. I don't remember them now, but agape, eros,
phileo.
Yeah. So the bigger. Storge. Storge. Yeah. Exactly. Storge. And the love in the or the charity in the big circle of charity actually includes all of them, because charity can be love between siblings or family, friends, etc. But then you have an inner circle called erotic charity, and that is what is called eros in the Bible, what you have between a man and a woman. And within that circle, there is what he calls romantic love. And outside of this circle, you have enchantment, that is the imitator of romantic love. And just to sum up this, what he says that when you have a marriage between a man and a woman, you're in the circle of erotic charity. But actually, not all couples experience romantic love. How is it? No, but he says that not every person has the sort of ability or personality to experience romantic love. I mean, romantic love is the, you know, where the feeling where you can't be away from your loved one. Probably the one that you feel in the beginning of a relationship more maybe than in the end. I don't know. But you know, you call them once per hour, you want to be with them 24/7, etc., etc. Actually, some couples does never experience that. But his point is that it doesn't have to be anything wrong with it. You can be aimed for each other as a man and a husband and a wife without feeling that you always have to be with everyone and touch the one another and etc. etc. It's okay to actually be in a relationship and be aim for each other without that feeling. And the problem is that in society today, you expect that feeling to be a couple. If you don't if you don't have that feeling when you meet a man or a woman, you say that, well, we're probably not right for each other, and you end the relationship. But you can be right for each other without feeling that. And therefore, many people is ending up in this enchantment circle where you experience this blossom, romantic love. But as I said before, enchantment is love without the will. So as soon this these feelings sort of fades, if you don't have the will, you will end the relationship and you will start a new one, and it maybe ends up here again and it fades, and you know, you see. But actually a relationship can start here and actually go over to this circle. That's really possible. And you know, relationship can also start in charity. I mean, a friend that you've had for maybe 20 years and end up in romantic love. But there are two misconceptions here. You think that love should be enchantment, and as soon as feeling goes away, you end the relationship and start a new one, and say, this was not right, you start a new one. Or you really find the love of your life, but you don't feel this enchantment feeling, so you end it because of that. So that's two big misconceptions as he sees it, and I really think he has a point. Then he actually go into something called sexual beauty, and that, yeah. He tries to define this word of sexual beauty, that it's more of of course you wanna be maybe and dress beautiful or sexy to the other what do you say, Sean?
gender.
I mean, you wanna look attractive and you wanna feel attractive, but sexiness in that sense, right way to see it is actually to send a message of marriage material rather than sex material. So he wants to redefine this concept. He says that is the right way to see it. If I see one someone beautiful or sexy, the right way would be to understand her as a, you know, marriage material, and not just something, you know, one night stand thing. And he actually says that this better declares the real sexual beauty. And of course, that's also something in society today, as you see that, I mean, you probably heard that, like, women shouldn't be dressed like this and that, because they can risk themselves in different environments of being abused or something. But it's rather the wrong thing is that the perception of the men thinking of her as an object rather than potential wife, I would say. And he also says that another misunderstanding about sex is sexual purity. So sexual purity is actually, I mean, the definition of in the Bible is that sex should be between a man and a woman in a marriage. So sexual purity is where you don't have sex, actually, because you're probably not married then. He says that sexual purity reflects a healthy respect for the power and the meaning of sex. So actually to not have sex is to actually respect the laws of God actually the intrinsic meaning of sex. And he also refers to other sources. For instance, there are two sociologists, not Christian, probably, but they say that if we were asked to design a system for making sure that children's basic needs were met, we would probably come up with something quite similar to the two-parent ideal. So this is to a non-Christian sociologist saying that the two-parent ideal, a man and a woman, is the best thing for the children, for a child. And of course, they say if we were asked to design a system, well, it is design, right? We know that. It is design. So it's probably the best ideal. But then also he says that he actually says that it's hard or maybe even impossible to experience 100% satisfaction within a marriage or within a sexual relationship. Yeah, I'm thinking about that. So maybe it's because maybe that is why you see all this, you know, sexual, I don't say, what say, advanced different constellations or ways of having sex or whatever. Because people never feel 100% satisfied. They have always to, you know, go up a level. Oh God, I'm not really satisfied here. I have to try something new, etc., etc. And he says that we never can experience 100% satisfaction before the time we are up in heaven with God. I'm not saying that we have a lot of sex in heaven, but he says that God is the missing piece of 100% satisfaction. And many people, I think, can believe that we're gonna get 100% satisfaction. And when we hear, and when we don't get it, we try maybe a new relationship or a new way of doing things or etc. etc. And you try around, and you maybe you will never be satisfied, and you end relationship to begin new ones. And you never will be satisfied. That because there's a missing piece here on earth. Even though we have God in our hearts, we will never be 100% satisfied until we are up with Him in heaven. That's his sort of point and sort of his conclusion in the end. And I think it's thoughtful. Yeah, this was a really brief, and I didn't have a lot of time to prepare this, but I hope you could grasp something of it. And I really recommend the book for everyone, for young people, for old people, for, yeah, anyone actually. So I can show the, it's called On the Meaning of Sex. Actually, cover. Yeah. So this is the cover on the meaning of sex, and the author is Buddhism.
Kan du förstora författaren?
Ja, det kan
jag. Det är
svårt. Ja. Bad Zs Zebski. Oh, yeah, you can get, you can write
yeah.
it later. I think it was. And as I said, in the end, he really, you know, concluded everything with God in the picture, like things that he left unanswered during the book. Then came in the last chapter, like, this is why they say that the design, this would be the best design for a child to grow up in. And this is why you're lacking 100% satisfaction within a relationship, and etc. So cool. Yeah, so not